everyone, and welcome to Linux Crazy Podcast. This is podcast number 38. I hope everybody's doing well. If you want to contact me, you can contact me at david@linuxcrazy.com, or most of the time I'm over at IRC at Freenode on #LinuxCrazy. Lately, I've been playing around with the Python, learning a little bit more. I've been having a beef about video cards. I can't get DRI working on an open source driver, the particular card that I'm using now, ATI HD 2600 XT, with 256 megabytes of memory, and I'm using the Radeon HD open source driver. I've gotten away from all proprietary drivers. I'm trying to go with all open source drivers, and it works very well, but no DRI yet. I still have to give props to SUSE and AMD for opening up the driver for open source, and they seem to be working on it pretty hard. So hopefully maybe in another year or 6 months or so, there'll be a fully open source driver and video card for Linux that will be DRI compatible. So that would be fantastic. Another thing that just drives me batty is the Intel HD audio. I have a laptop that has that particular sound card in it, and most laptops seems like are coming out with that particular sound card. I have nothing but problems with it. It plays sound, but it's usually the volume is low and I've got to play with it, and the mic doesn't work, and it's just a pain in the neck. I used to have the old laptop I had a ATI sound card in it, and it worked perfect. I never had any trouble with it. Everything worked. For some reason, these Intel HD audio sound cards are a pain in the neck. Now for some good news, my Asterisk server is doing very well, and I got it set up to where it's an IAX2 trunk to a callwithus.com, which is my, I guess you call it, provider, and I'm using SIP phones to connect to the Asterisk server, so I can use either SIP soft phones, which Ikeja is really good, or any other IP phone I can use that's SIP, and works very well. I was under the impression that if I was using IAX2 that I needed to have the phones I was using needed to be IAX2, but that's not true. You can use a SIP phone and then trunk the connection to your ISP, I guess it's called, using IAX, which works very well because IAX is the native Asterisk protocol. And you only need to open one port with that, whereas SIP, you need to open up a bunch of different ports. So you can use SIP on your local LAN, and on the wide area network, you can use IAX2. And it works very well. I was under the impression that you had to have everything the same. But I guess what Asterisk actually is a bridge between different protocols. Someone gave me a PC that wasn't working, and all I had to do was replace the memory. So if there's anyone out there that wants a PC for free and wants to pay for the shipping, I'll ship it to you. It's a P4 with 2.26 processor. It's got 768 of memory. It's got a 80 gigabyte hard drive, and it also has a Nvidia video card. I installed Gen 2 on it. It's just got a base install. I just use it as a file server. But like I said, if anybody wants it, wants to play around with Gen 2, I'll send it to you. So just email me. The microphone I'm using right now is a Samson CO1U USB Studio condenser microphone, and it works very well. I've got two other mics. The first microphone I used in my earlier podcast is M-Audio podcast factory. What it is a it's a auto interface with preamp, and the microphone goes into that, and it works pretty good. What I'll do is I'm going to record from that mic and let you see how that sounds. And like I said, you're listening to the CO1U to see how that sounds. And also, I just got a Plectronix DSP-500 for use with Asterix. So I'll make a little recording of that, and I won't edit it or anything. I'll just leave them raw so you can see how all three of them sound. All right, yeah, and this is that M-Audio, and it's kind of buggy. Sometimes it records real good, and other times it doesn't record real good. Sometimes it sounds like you're talking like 10 feet away from it, and other times it's crystal clear. Not exactly sure why. The other problem I had with it was when I was doing GTK record my desktop, so it would only play back on one side of the speakers, on the left side. It wouldn't play back on the right side. So when you were playing the video, it would be kind of weird because the sound would only be coming out of one side. So that's why I went with the Samson mic, and it seems to do a lot better. And also that Plectronix sounds pretty good to me. So only thing I don't like about the Plectronix is that, you know, when you're wearing a headphone, I like talking into the mic. It's a lot easier. You feel more free instead of having something wrapped around your head. So anyhow, that's the three different mics. Wow, could you believe how bad that M-Audio sounded? I just went over there and recorded with the Plectronix and the M-Audio, and the M-Audio sounded like I was talking in the other room over there to it. So, yeah, there's something definitely wrong with that thing. It might have something to do with me keep unplugging it and plugging it back in because I was playing with that Plectronix headset. So they're both USB, so maybe that has something to do with it and it's not the actual device. But I'm not going to use it anymore anyhow, because like I said, the main thing is because it only record when it plays back on those screencasts, it only plays back to one speaker from the one side. So that's no good. I kind of enjoy doing the screencast more than I do the just regular podcast. It just seems more interesting to me. Plus, it's easier for me to kind of explain what's going on when I'm just talking into the microphone. Sometimes it's hard for me to explain very well exactly what I'm doing. All right, hello everybody. Now this is the Plectronix, so you can see how this sounds. This is a real nice mic and headset together. Russ went to the Ohio Linux Fest, and also Verbal too, and all the other bunch of the other podcasters. And Russ was nice enough to send me some I would call it a care package from the Ohio Linux Fest. He sent me some stickers and the official book, and also some more information from the Ohio Linux Fest. It was real nice of Russ to send that to me. Thank you, Russ. And one of the biggest kicks I got out of the links that he had provided me with was looking at all the different pictures of the different podcasters. You know how it's funny how you have in your mind, you have a kind of an idea of what you think the person looks like, and then you actually see their picture, and sometimes it's pretty close, and other times it's way, way, way off base. So anyhow, this is that Plectronix DSP-500, real nice headset. On that box I brought back from the dead, I installed a PC BSD on it, the new one 7.01. I just wanted to see what it was like, and I installed it, and it's a real fast install. But for some reason, in that KDE, I think it's got KDE.4.1.2 or something. Anyhow, it locked up. When I would hit an icon on the desktop, the whole desktop would freeze. So I thought maybe there was something wrong with the video card or something. So I had Fedora 9 here that I had downloaded before, and I'd never installed it on anything. So I installed Fedora 9, and Now that wasn't a quick install. That was this install took forever, but it did work very well when I got done. So that's just a couple little reviews. And on the Python front, lately I've been reading this book. It's called Python for Unix and Linux System Administration. It's by Noah Gift and Jeremy M. Jones, and it's a really good book. It talks about the subprocess module, which I talked about in the last screencast, and also it has a whole lot of other stuff in it. And one section of the book, he talks about using Python with SNMP, and SNMP is a protocol for managing devices on an IP network. Typically, this is done via UDP ports 161 and 162, although it is possible, but rare, to use TCP as well. Just about any modem device in a data center supports SNMP. This means that it is possible to manage not only switches, routers, but servers, printers, UPSs, storage, and more. The basic use for SNMP is to send UDP packets to host and to wait for a response. This is how monitoring of devices occurs on a very simple level. It is also possible to do other things with SNMP protocol, though, such as control devices and write agents that respond to conditions. Python comes with bindings for the open source SNMP, which is net-SNMP. And as you can imagine, this is keeping me very busy, because it can be very complicated to me. So that's one of the things I'm kind of playing around with. I'm still enjoying playing around with WXPython. I'm on their mailing list, and a lot of the times people ask questions and they come up with some pretty neat code. And what I'll usually do is I'll go ahead and download the code, create a little file with it, and play around with the WXPython, create little GUIs with it. It's a lot of fun because you can actually see what you're doing. You get immediate gratification because you get a little GUI out of it. He's also got a very good section on threads in Python. Threads could be described as a necessary evil to some people, although many people dislike threads. To solve many problems that require dealing with multiple things at once, threads are different than processes because they all run inside the same process and share state and memory. That is both the thread's greatest advantage and disadvantage. The advantage is that you can create a data structure that all threads can access without creating an IPC or inter-process communications mechanism. There are also hidden complexities in dealing with threads. Often, a trivial program of just a few dozen lines of code can become extremely complex with the introduction of threads. Threads are difficult to debug without adding extensive tracing, and even then it is complex, as the output of the tracing can become confusing and overwhelming. While one of the authors was writing an SNMP discovery system that discovered data centers, the sheer magnitude of threads that needed to be spawned was very difficult to handle. He's talking about himself, the authors, one of the authors. I'm reading from the book here. There are strategies to deal with threads, however, and often implementing a robust tracing library is one of them. That said, they can become a very handy tool in solving a complex problem. I was just playing around with it. You can use threads for just like if you wanted to ping a bunch of different servers, or you just wanted to check on a bunch of different servers. Use threads for that. I guess just like in anything else, you have to first research what you want to do and determine what is the best way to do it. So maybe some things threads would be an advantage, and other things they would be a disadvantage. But it's pretty neat to learn about. One of the other things I've been playing around with the WXPython, and I'll probably do a screencast on this, is creating an Apache log viewer with WXPython. I've got it started, and it's pretty neat. So hang around, maybe you'll see it in a few episodes. Another book I've been going through is called Python Phrase Book, and that's by Brad Daly. Basically, what it is just an accumulation of an overview of different programs, and it's pretty neat. Right now I'm getting into tuples a little more advanced. He's got some really neat scripts in here, and it helps me to look at the scripts, play with them, alter them a little bit, and then what I'll do is I'll actually take these scripts and make up something like real world that I can use them for so that I understand what's going on. So that's a lot of fun. All right, I've rambled on enough. I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and I'll talk to you later. Bye.